case of the morning is number 023176, the United States against Donald R. Bennett. Shoba.
May it please the court. Two issues that are raised on this appeal are, first, whether or not there was a Rule 11 violation at the time of the entry of the plea colloquy and whether that error was harmless, and secondly, whether it was or wasn't harmless, whether, in addition, the district court abused discretion in denying Mr. Bennett's motion to withdraw his plea. I think that the government doesn't go so far as it acknowledging that there was a violation of Rule 11, but doesn't seriously challenge it either, instead proceeds immediately to the harmless question. And I think it's clear that, at least in two respects, there was a violation, and that is that the package deal, or the wire plea, was not disclosed to Judge Sagel at the time of the entry of Donald Bennett's plea, and therefore the judge never made any inquiry or any colloquy with him about whether it had any impact on his decision to plead guilty, either because he didn't know all the circumstances of his plea or because he was being pressured by some other individual, in this case by the co-defendant, Mr. Landau, into pleading guilty. The rule expressly requires that that inquiry be made, not only that they be made, but that they be made in the language of 11E1-2 before accepting the plea agreement and at the time that the plea is offered. And 11D also says that the court shall not accept such an agreement without first determining the voluntariness of the plea on the record. And it's our view that, therefore, the violation is clear, which leaves the question of whether or not that violation was harmless. The only thing that the government suggests why it wouldn't be harmless is that a year later, the judge conducted an evidentiary hearing in which he allowed Mr. Bennett to put on evidence of his coercion. That is, he allowed him to testify himself about the threats that he underwent, as well as the circumstances of his entering the plea. I think it's important.
He was asked at the first occasion, however, whether he was doing so voluntarily or anybody made him any promises or threats to make him do it, wasn't he?
You're asking whether, which is the first question that the judge...
At the first arraignment, where he entered the plea of guilty, he responded that he was doing so voluntarily because he was guilty of the crime mischarged, that no one who made him any threats or promises, and no one coerced him into doing it. Am I correct in my...
He did say that, Judge.
And he said that under oath.
He did. But as even the district court recognized...
I just pause right there. I mean, whatever implications you may draw from that, I just want to make sure that was not in dispute.
No, there's not in dispute. The plea colloquy reflects that those questions were asked of Donald Bennett. But he was also asked whether there were any agreements other than the agreements that were contained in the written plea agreement, and he answered that to his knowledge there were none. But in fact, we now know there was, and that agreement involved the relationship with the co-defendant.
But the agreement, his agreement, was in its entirety.
Judge, I don't believe that. I know that's what the government tries to do, Judge, but I don't believe, and the cases don't support, that kind of breakdown. That is to say, once Mr. Landau's plea agreement was conditioned on Mr. Bennett pleading guilty...
Was the plea agreement... No, the plea agreement for the other guy was conditioned on your guy's pleading guilty. That plea agreement was not...
I believe they both were, Judge, and I don't accept, in the cases...
Was there a written plea agreement?
Was there a written plea agreement for Mr. Bennett? Yes, there was, Judge.
Did it discuss anything else?
It did not disclose that term of the agreement. That's correct.
So far as it was there, it was in its entire, it's complete.
Well, it represented to be entire and complete, but it was not, in fact, entire and complete.
What was left out was the fact that he was induced to enter this, according to him, this decision, by his opponent, his partner, only gets a break if they plead together, right?
Well, yes, what was left out was that their plea agreements were linked by the government. The government said, we're not going to allow this...
Nothing illegal about that.
I'm not... No, Judge, we're not claiming that's illegal. Apparently, all of the other circuits...
And your guy knew it.
He did not know that that was a condition of his plea agreement. He was never advised, Judge, that Mr. Bennett...
I understand he testified that the other guys told him, if you don't plead, I'm cooked. And he said he was taking him off the hook because he got him into the mess.
No, that isn't the evidence, Judge. No, in fact, Mr. Bennett was unaware of it, and Mr. Bennett's lawyer was not aware of it. Both of them testified that they were not aware.
What was the coercion?
Where's the harm?
The coercion was that he was pressured by Mr. Landau to plead. He didn't know the reason.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Sorry, he did not know the reason Mr. Landau was pressuring him and yelling at him and hollering at him.
If he didn't know about it, and his lawyer didn't know about it, we're back to Judge Evans' question, who got hurt?
Well, the harm is that the district court judge didn't know about it either. And
you're here representing the district court judge.
No, but I think that the rule requires, Judge, that not only that the district court make inquiry into it, but that the defendant know all the terms and circumstances of his plea. It's as if they had promised something to somebody that was significant to his plea, but it was never disclosed to him. Now, the rules don't allow you to have agreements other than the agreements that are put on the record before the judge at the time of the entry of the plea. There can't be secret agreements. And in here, there was a secret agreement. And it's not...
There often are.
The harm, Judge, is that, number one...
That's not an altogether unusual situation, is it?
Well, I hope it's an unusual circumstance, Judge, because the rules do not contemplate that parts, agreements, promises that are made are not disclosed on the record. In fact, as I understand the government's position, they're relying on the plea colloquy in which it says that there were no promises, which we now know to be not the case. So apparently I'm not understanding...
Well, there are no promises made to your client, and that's the question.
But they were conditions of his plea agreement. In other words, his plea had consequences of which he was not aware. So if he was going to get life imprisonment and he was unaware of that, Judge, then it had consequences of which he was unaware.
Consequences were to the other guy, not to him.
No, they were to him as well, Judge, because his plea was conditioned on the acceptance of both pleas.
The acceptance of the plea by the government was conditioned upon the other guy pleading, both of them pleading guilty. Which is not that's where Judge Evans is, right? That's not at all unusual.
It is if it's part of the plea agreement, Judge, and if it's not disclosed. Now, if he knows about it and he acquiesces to it and the judge questions him about it as Rule 11 requires, then there is no violation. There is no harm. But if he doesn't know about it and there's this secret deal and he isn't questioned about it, then there is harm. And specifically, the harm in this case, as both Mr. Bennett's attorney and Mr. Bennett testified at the subsequent hearing, had he known about that, he would not have entered his guilty plea. He would not have gone forward with the guilty plea. He would have insisted, as he had for 4 years, Judge, on his right to go to trial. So it cannot be said that it was harmless in this case. And in fact, that standard of harmlessness, the government doesn't even address. All they say is, well, there was a hearing, the judge inquired into voluntariness later, and determined, well, I don't think it was involuntary. I don't think the threats were substantial enough. That is not an adequate substitute for the timely advising of the defendant of his rights, of the requirement that a record be created which reflects reality as opposed to, in this case, something other than that. The whole purpose for that rule and those requirements were defeated, and nothing in that happened in that subsequent hearing corrected that. In fact, what it established without challenge was that Mr. Bennett had always insisted on his right to trial, continued to insist on his right to trial. As soon as he learned about this, he moved to withdraw, he asked his lawyer to move to withdraw the plea and allow him to go forward to trial. Judge, I see my time is out. I would ask that the court reverse the lower court and allow Mr. Bennett to go to trial.
McGovern.
May it please the court. Patrick McGovern on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, the district court did not abuse its discretion in this case when it denied Mr. Bennett's motion to withdraw his guilty plea. The district court held an evidentiary hearing right when it learned, or soon after it learned about this package deal. It held a, the evidentiary was a full-blown hearing. He was able to, the district judge was able to assess the credibility of the witnesses, the demeanor of the witnesses. Mr. Bennett testified. In fact, Mr. Bennett conducted much of the hearing himself, questioned the witnesses. There was no clear error when the judge ultimately issued an 8-page opinion with his findings in this case that Mr. Bennett's plea was voluntary. He confirmed that the answers that Mr. Bennett gave at the Rule 11 colloquy were in fact true. They were voluntary. There was no coercion. And just to address the point Mr. Bennett's counsel makes that Mr. Bennett did not know about the situation here, about the package deal, the record does not support that. In fact, the district court found that once Mr. Bennett got the benefit of the bargain, then he moved to withdraw his guilty plea. That suggests that the district court found that Mr. Bennett knew about this arrangement, and that finding was not clearly erroneous. In fact, the testimony of Ms. Ellis and Mr. Hessler support that finding. They said that they met with Mr. Bennett at three times. One of those times, at least one of those times, was because Mr. Bennett wanted to meet with them. And during those meetings, they told Mr. Bennett the condition of Mr. Landau's plea, and that was that Mr. Bennett plead guilty. And Mr. Bennett pled guilty, as the district court found, because Mr. Landau was a friend of his, and he had some moral compunction to take responsibility for this, fraudulent telephone scheme, and plead guilty to help Mr. Landau. Again, the district court issued an 8-page opinion after a full evidentiary hearing.
Apart from the this case, how much time has he got left to serve on whatever?
Your Honor, the record says that Mr. Bennett will not be released till 2032, even before he was sentenced on this case, 40 months.
This case is almost, from his point of view, an abstraction.
That's correct, Your Honor. As the district court said in its opinion, the context is relevant here. Mr. Bennett will be serving a lengthy term, and I believe in even the record.
I know he doesn't have telephone privileges at the moment.
That's correct, too, Your Honor. That was another factor that the district court found, that that was one reason why Mr. Bennett chose to withdraw his guilty plea. Immediately after he was sent back to the MCC, his telephone privileges were revoked. So that was just an additional reason, in addition to his friendship and his moral reasoning to plead guilty in this case. The district court also recognized and acknowledged the case law in this area, recognized the two cases from the First Circuit which suggested that an evidentiary hearing be held in this circumstance. And it also tracked the factors under Rule 32E, whether there was a fair and just reason. And again, those findings by the district court that Mr. Bennett's plea was voluntary were not clearly erroneous. For those reasons, Your Honor, Your Honors, and for the reasons stated in government's brief, we ask that the court affirm the conviction and sentence of Mr. Bennett. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGovern. Mr. Schobot, you have a minute left.
Just two quick comments. First, the evidence about what happened in the meeting between Mr. Landau's attorneys and Mr. Bennett is not as the government says. That is to say, the judge never resolved what transpired at that meeting. There was a conflict in the testimony about what actually happened. But what is clear that came from that meeting is that Mr. Bennett was not aware that it was a package deal that was going forward in front of the judge. And in fact, no copy, for example, of Mr. Landau's plea agreement was with him, was part of that discussion between the attorneys and Mr. Landau, was never sent to Mr. Bennett's counsel, and there's no question on this record that both Mr. Bennett's attorney and Mr. Bennett went into that change of plea without knowledge that was a condition of the agreement. Secondly, while it is true that Mr. Bennett has a substantial prison sentence ahead of him, and while in some senses one could say that is an abstract question, obviously what decision you render today will affect all defendants who plead guilty, including Mr. Bennett, and it's critically important that this court not accept the government's invitation to allow a subsequent hearing to provide as an adequate substitute for what the rule plainly commands. I know in the Daniels court that the First Circuit rejected that invitation, and we think that this court should do the same. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schobach. You served by appointment of the court, I understand, and we have the deep thanks of the court for your fine efforts on behalf of your client.
You're welcome.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel for their fine submissions today. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has completed the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.